Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very pleased to have with me today on University Matters, Dr. Tania Samwood-Bonnici, who is a lecturer in the Edward de Bonnor Institute for the Design and Development of Thinking here at the University of Malta. Just a few words about her. Dr. Samwood-Bonnici commenced her academic career with a BA in Business Management, an honours degree. This she followed with an MA in Marketing, and then went on to read for a PhD in Industrial and Business Administration from the University of Warwick in the UK. She has been Associate Fellow, Marketing and Strategic Management Group at the Warwick Business School at the University of Warwick since 2004, and is, as I said earlier, a lecturer here at the University. Dr. Samwood-Bonnici has not only developed the academic side of her field, but has also worked in the private sector, both in Malta and abroad, as founding director in a firm of business consultants. She has also sat on various boards, both locally and overseas, and amongst other appointments was a founding member of Telecom Partnership Development Forum, roundtable of marketing directors from IBM, Ericsson, Motorola, Marconi, Nortel, and others in the United Kingdom between 2002 and 2004. She was awarded a nomination for Best Paper at the Strategic Management Society Conference in 2005, the title of Associate Fellow with the Warwick Business School in 2004, and was the recipient of two scholarships, one awarded by the Association of Commonwealth Universities and the other the Cambridge Commonwealth Scholarship for Postgraduate Studies in 1999. Current research, I might say, sounds absolutely gripping, and I look forward to asking her all about it. Welcome to you, Dr. Samwood-Bonnici.
Thank you very much, Patricia. That's a glowing introduction. I hope I rise up to your expectations.
Well, it's probably rather reductive, actually. I looked at your research work and your website and just to get a feel of what work you're doing, and I must say the list of papers was quite fascinating. Before we sort of go into a deeper discussion, perhaps you could tell us what the main thrusts of your research are.
The main field of the research would be strategic management in a nutshell, and we're going through different variations of strategic management from industry to industry, and also following different lines of thought which are emerging in strategic management. I work with a group of colleagues from the University of Warwick, and we're developing a team of researchers through our master's program in the University of Malta as well, which feed the research which we intend to take to publication. The field of strategic management, we're working on three areas: evolution of strategic management, ICT convergence and digitization, and we have another area which is competition and complexity. I'm leading these areas in the teams. In evolution of strategic management, it was a fantastic project. It's been going on for a couple of years, where from Malta I am collaborating with universities in America, and we are going through interviews with leading professors of strategy around the world. So we have some professors from Japan, America, England, many different countries. We even managed to get Henry Minsberg from McGill, Canada, for example, on our transcripts. Professor Gemmelwart from Harvard Business School, David Teese from Berkeley. And what we're seeing is that the field of strategic management, as people in the field would know, started off from the military. Post-war, it developed quite quickly into the commercial world. What we're seeing is that companies do not have a set strategy that they keep using year after year, but what they have developed is dynamic capabilities. They keep changing and shifting as the markets change, as the industry changes, and as technology changes. Now, the other two areas that I'm focusing on in strategic management is strategies for ICT companies, information communications technology companies. That started off with a very interesting project. We were asked by a round table of ICT companies, which were residing at the time in Brussels. Their branches there were like a lobby group on the regulators in the European Union. And we were asked by this round table, which contains eBay, Google, Microsoft, IBM, and many other ICT companies, to do a paper on how the industry has changed tremendously in the last 10 years. Because of convergence, because of all the different platforms converging on, you know, our one iPod or what comes over the internet, and how the regulators have to understand the changes and also regulate accordingly. Mm-hmm. I think it was an effort from the industry to come closer to the regulators with information rather than challenges, as they usually do. What we found out with that research, and that I was conducting with a manager from the MBA program in Warwick, is that the shift of power has moved from the national telecommunications companies all over the world towards the television companies, surprisingly enough, because they are now the new providers of telephony, of internet, and of course the old television channels. And the power is within their hands because some of them, not all of them, probably not the Maltese companies, would actually own the content, like the films themselves, sporting events, they would have the rights to that. So that determines whether or not people subscribe to their service or to other people. So it has quite a bit of a power shift implication for regulators. The third area of research I focus on is competition and complexity. We use the field of complexity theory, which comes out of physics actually, but once produced in a business sense is actually quite workable and practical. There's a study running, which I started 10 years ago. It's a 25-year study of mobile phone company strategies in the UK. So every tactic they come out with, every price change, every advertising campaign, we trace its merits and also its effects on the market. And surprisingly, because I started this out thinking that we will look at competitive advantage and diversity, and much to my surprise, I found quite the opposite. I found a sense of strategic herding and mimicry. Companies were copying very good strategies and, of course, ignoring other ones.
We're talking lots of different fields of interest really here. You are taking in technology, you have to understand something about ICT, you have to understand something about business marketing, you have to understand something about even physics really, as you mentioned. So it's putting together a lot of different branches.
It did help that I do come from the commercial world. I've worked in ST Microelectronics, Vodafone, Melita Cable Television, and I've had my own consulting company. And I think being in the consulting world, you learn to be multidisciplinary. You can't just be an expert at one thing and stick to that. We don't have that luxury.
No.
So it does help when you're doing academic research to bring in other disciplines. One area, for example, I had to look into because of the competition and complexity stream I'm looking at is Darwinism, for example, evolutionary theory, of which I have a few papers published. And that gives you a sense of how in competition you need diversity, just like you would have speciation, diversity of species in a population in the beginning of development. And later on you get a shakeout and kind of a survival of the fittest or the most fit for the environment in the end.
Technology really is all pervasive now and clearly plays a multiple role as facilitator and protagonist as well as product. How are companies actually coping with this multifaceted phenomenon, because they have to use it and sell it at the
Absolutely.
Same time?
I think they're coping very well. In the local scenario, we've seen banks such as HSBC and BOV set up excellent online platforms where the Maltese and anyone else living in Malta are engaging in millions of transactions. I'm not saying per year, but per month. It's made everything easier for the market. It's made things easier for the market, and it's made things easier for the organizations themselves. Then we also see supermarkets in Malta. We see Pavi and Smart again with excellent online shopping platforms. And I think That's an excellent example that if you build it, they will come. We are not in a scenario where we think, oh, the Maltese will never buy online. The Maltese are buying online, and they're buying online from shops abroad. So if we if we have online platforms locally, people will go to them as well. Even though we have a limited size, but buying online is practical not just because of distance, but because of the element of choice and browsing and choosing and selecting the right price, etc. Times of Malta, I think, is another very good example in the advertising field, a very professional setup. And what we're seeing is that obviously smaller companies are ramping up. Most companies have a website, some sort of presence, even if it's just two pages. Others are investing heavily in their internal computer systems. And there will be a phase when we will see much more online activity from the smaller shops as well. Then if you take the more affluent countries, of course the businesses there are riding the wave in an advanced phase, because online shopping has been around for 10 years, 12 years, 15 years in America, where else we're still kind of starting to ramp up. In more affluent European countries, we see companies using cloud computing.
You'll have to explain that a bit, because I read that and I wasn't quite sure what it meant.
Well, for a long time, if we installed an accounting system, we would have had to install the software onto our mainframe or onto our sub-PCs. But with cloud computing, you can go to platforms such as Salesforce.com. The beauty of this is it's available to me and you, and it's available to large companies like IBM and eBay and so on. You can go to Salesforce.com, and it's like a shopping center of software. And if you need just an accounting package, you can subscribe to it, and there will be a choice within this platform. You can subscribe to it, and you do not have to install anything. So you don't have the responsibility of the mainframe. You don't have to hire IT people. You would subscribe to it, and you would get support online. The challenge with that is the shift in mindset. All your data would be stored on the at a remote location, not on your own servers. But a lot of people are opting for that. And it's a cheaper solution. I think that this is going to be the next wave of change we're going to see in ICT.
I dipped into some of your papers and looked at what were the words that crops up on a regular basis, the keywords, and certainly networks was one of them. How are they affecting contemporary business strategies? I mean, can you explain what a network is in this context and what effect it has?
We're living in a network economy. We're all connected to each other. It's easy to look up an old classmate from 30, 40 years ago on Facebook or LinkedIn and all the other social platforms. We are linked in into, even our houses are linked with telephones, mobile, internet, TV as a minimum. And of course, the implications on the economy and also our personal lives is tremendous, and it's changed many things. In fact, we've come to a point where we're no longer in awe of this change, but we take it for granted as a given factor. Now the effects on the economy and many other things, I would summarize into three areas. We are seeing standards moving higher and higher, even for companies in remote areas. They can very easily compare themselves to other companies in bigger economies and in larger countries. So standards can rise very rapidly because you have a lot of information accessible in a few minutes of what people in the industry are doing. We can observe tactics of competitors, and we can improve faster, and we can maintain our standards at a much faster speed. The lag between larger companies and smaller companies or developed economies and less developed economies could become narrower. Of course, there are other factors that may come in. So there is an issue of lower disadvantage, better standards, and maybe a bit of homogenization as well. We all start to become more similar as we share the same languages and the same tactics. Another tremendous new dynamic of the network economy is network effects, also known as network externalities. Basically, this means when you launch a network product would be Facebook, LinkedIn, telephone, mobile, TV, any product which allows people to connect to each other. Whenever you launch any of these products, including software products, they will take off slowly in the beginning. So you may see a flat sales curve for the first 5 years, but you will see a very rapid takeoff once it reaches critical mass. So the changes these products are bringing into our lives are quite quick, as we had seen the mobile phone market take off in just 2 years between 1998 and the year 2000, although mobile phones had been around for 15 years and thriving as a business.
In one of your articles entitled "The Competitive Environment in the Information Economy," you use the mobile phone companies as an example of a highly competitive environment which requires specific adaptive skills. As an outsider, I suppose, just as a user, I've always wondered how such companies actually cope with that kind of cutthroat competition in that particular field of business, or do they? Do some fall along the road?
Cope is a very good word to use, because we saw some extraordinary coping strategies within various industries. Let's move out of Malta and look at the UK scenario, and let's take the research I'm working on, which is this 25-year study of strategies of Vodafone, O2, Orange and T-Mobile, and a few other companies in the mobile industry. What we're finding is that, well, surprisingly or not, there is low technological differentiation between them. So a phone call you would make on a Vodafone network would be unrecognizable from a call you would make from T-Mobile, in the larger sense. Of course, I know there are roaming issues and so on. So technological differentiation is low. They all have access to very good suppliers of networks, of cabling, of mobile phones, of software. They probably have more or less equal access to all this technology. Also, interestingly, what we see is that when somebody comes up with a very good strategy, for example, a strategy which would penetrate the younger market or the retired market, for example, that strategy is immediately copied. Why? Because they have very similar capabilities of marketing, and if not the same kind of cash flow, the same resources to do so. So we're seeing a form of complex adaptive behavior. This is how they're coping with technological change. They try to differentiate themselves to brand identity, imagery, logos, advertising, but they're also making a huge effort on CRM, customer relationship management. Again, the more technology they put into customer relationship management, the better. Customers want to walk into any high street shop and just give their name, and for the person in front of them to pull up all their details of billing, of four different services if necessary that are subscribed at the company. And we're seeing a ramp up in CRM. I mean, this is a difficulty not just the Maltese companies are facing, but also companies abroad, to bring in all these different services onto one CRM system to provide a better service. So in a nutshell, the coping strategy is, since it's a high-risk industry, because the technology changes so often, there is what we call isomorphic strategic behavior, a form of strategic herding.
Each of the companies, as you say, they have they all probably have a very good product, but they have to find value-added ways of promoting it somehow, I mean, to put it in very simple terms.
Yes, we used to teach competitive differentiation and first mover advantage. We are shying away from those words in the language of strategy because we are finding, since resources are becoming more reachable and more common for companies, that the service is becoming more homogeneous. In fact, a phenomenon we see in this particular country that we're studying is that if there are five competitors, they will each get a market share of around 20%, plus or minus 2%, which isn't a lot. If there are four competitors, they will each get a market share of 25%.
That's amazing.
Which means ICT products are becoming a commodities market, just like you would find for goods in a supermarket, for example, where market shares tend to be shared equally.
The consumer in all this, is the consumer king or perhaps queen, with power over voting with their feet, to use a rather old-fashioned expression, I suppose? We seem to love to do like everyone else, and we sort of join these groups that we've been mentioning before that are deemed cool, eBay, Twitter, Facebook, Google, and myriad others. Is this what you mean also by herding? Do the consumers herd as well as the companies? And if we do herd, how can we herd when we always consider ourselves so, you know, so independent thinkers?
Absolutely. The term strategic herding as such is limited to companies, not individuals, in our academic language. These particular companies are using strategic herding to minimize risk, to play safe in an environment that is always shifting. They're huddling together to reduce the onslaught from the economy. They're reducing uncertainty, just like the telephone companies did for a while. Now, if you take it at a personal level, herding takes on a completely different dimension because you have many more players. If you take strategic herding in mobile phone companies, there would be a handful per country, depending how many licenses have been issued. But if you take, I wouldn't say strategic herding, but socializing, or maybe herding and networking on a personal level, then suddenly you're talking about 60 million people on Facebook and continuously rising. And the dynamics become very complex, but also very flowing and very rapid. Twitter and Facebook are a different phenomena because they do address the need to belong to a group, to connect, to be part of something bigger. And that's kind of basic principles of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, for example. But I think the key success factor of these social networks is not to make you herd and be like the herd, but to enable you to express how you think, to show who you are, to share ideas, and maybe also to influence others. So in a sense, why strategic herding for companies makes them similar, social networks have the opposite effect. It's actually a very, very good platform of expressing individualities.
But something like eBay has an enormous monopoly. You have the effect of a lot of people who are adhering to using something like eBay. And what happens to the competition then? I wonder why people don't want perhaps to look for other alternatives to eBay. What happens in that dynamic between the company that's producing this service, wonderful service, and the consumer? Why does the consumer always want to go to eBay? Is it because only they produce this wonderful product?
Would you want to go to a store which has four lines of products and maybe a choice of 20 brands each? Or would you rather go to a store who has an infinite product line, anything from cars down to stationery, and has thousands of brands from where to choose from? So I think with regards to consumer choice, that has been the greatest contribution to eBay. It's introduced choice into countries. It's crossed borders and it's provided a great service. And I think eBay has also helped a lot of smaller businesses. Now, of course, eBay does affect our smaller shops, even purchasing, I don't know, school bags, for example. You would find local importers or just even smaller shops feeling the crunch because eBay is taking a lot of that business. But then again, eBay has taken but has given as well to small businesses. If you want to set up your own shop on eBay, you can do that within maybe 2 hours. You don't even have to be a technology expert.
Fair enough. Another key word, not to say buzzword, innovation. Where does it fit in with all this? I mean, you're talking about the big boys very often in your papers. What about the small startup entrepreneurs? Where does innovation fit in with them?
Innovation used to be very difficult to purchase. It used to cost a great deal. And I think we're living in the perfect century for small businesses because buying in software, buying in systems, making yourself more efficient through these tools has become much cheaper. You can access these things at a much lower price. Any software imaginable is available online most of the time free or at a very low subscription rate. You can set up a company website, you can buy templates for a company website, and very, very beautiful templates for just $60, for example. And you'd have a choice of literally thousands of templates to choose from. CRM systems for a company, customer relationship systems, where you have all the customer data, used to cost in the region of 20,000, 30,000, 40,000, and only the larger companies could afford this. Only for the larger companies, it would even go into millions, but for a medium-sized company, that would be the bill. Today, you can subscribe to a very simple CRM system like HiRise.com, which only costs around some $50 per month, and you have your databases online, and it's structured in a way that actually kind of educates you a little bit on how to treat your customers and what sort of campaigns you can do to keep your relationship going.
The business development scenario is obviously changing by the minute, if not by the second, and there's this evolution in process. In the 2 minutes we have left, I know you can't tell us what lies ahead, of course, but perhaps you can give us a guesstimate as to where you think we're going with regard to business strategies. Are there going to be different drivers to the strategies in the near future?
Around 5 points come to mind. I think the key word is strategic caution. The international markets are still reeling from the crash in October 2008, and later on that was the crash for the ICT companies, and the crash that came in March 2009 for the rest of the industries. We're still seeing companies like Apple that's applying no strategic caution, in the sense that it is not doing strategic coding and it is going full speed ahead with innovations. But that is an exception. Not every company will be able to follow that risky strategy and succeed. There's also businesses have to adapt their strategies because of regulation. You find a lot of local companies, the banks had to comply, insurance companies, and we see other industries coming on board because of Pillar 1, Pillar 2 regulations, to which they need to even overhaul the structure of their organizations. So strategy may be on the back burner for a while until they come up to speed. The next wave we are seeing is that we're seeing convergence of strategies, not just in ITC, where you have TV, mobile and internet moving on one platform, or you're getting all those services from one company, but we're seeing a convergence of business services. For example, a small business used to get consulting services from a business consulting firm. Today, the audit firms do a bit of that, although now they're letting go because of regulation. And we're seeing the law firms providing business services, for example. So we're seeing a lot of plug-and-play services out there which are accessible to people. If they don't have a strategic capability, they can bring it into their company from external sources.
Come to the end of the program. Thank you very, very much, Dr. Tania Samud-Bonditi, for coming to talk to us about this extremely topical subject.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's program. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.